The Local Administration, Federal Affairs, and Special District Subcommittee will come to order. Tamara, please call the roll.
Chairpersons Malika?
Present.
Representatives Amnesty?
Present.
Anderson?
Present.
Bartleman?
Here.
Barrero? Daly?
Here.
Dunkley?
Here.
Gottlieb?
Here.
Griffiths?
Present.
Hawkins?
Here.
Holcomb?
Here.
Schock?
Here.
McLean? Plankin?
Here.
Temple?
Here.
Cuck? Woodson? Yarkowski?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. Well, at the last meeting, we had two of our subcommittee members who are unable to join us, so I'm going to ask those two to do a quick introduction to the committee. Ranking Member Daly, why don't I lead off with you?
Sure. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Members, I'm very sorry that I wasn't with you for the last committee, but I'm looking forward to serving with each and every one of you. My name is Dan Daly. I represent District 96. That's parts of Broward County, Coral Springs, Tamarack Sunrise, and a huge swath of the Florida Everglades. Prior to being elected to the legislature in 2019 in a special election, I served 7 years on the Coral Springs City Commission. So this is my 10th year as an elected official, and I have the gray hair and the receding hairline to prove it. So always happy to be helpful if you have any questions or anything. Looking forward to serving in this committee with you, Madam Chair, and the Vice Chair, and this team. So thank you very much.
And then Rep. Anderson, welcome to our subcommittee.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Adam Anderson. I represent North Pinellas County, which is District 57. If you're more familiar with the old numbers, it's District 65, which is made up of Tarpon Springs, Palm Harbor, Safety Harbor, Oldsmar, and the northern part of Dunedin as well. Proud father of three. I'm a small business owner. I've been self-employed my whole life. And actually, one of the main reasons I decided to run for office is because I realized how important local leadership is. And I'm very, very excited and pleased to serve on this committee with y'all.
Thank you, Representative. Before we dive into our agenda, as a matter of housekeeping, I just ask that everybody make sure cell phones and other communication devices, including laptops, are turned off or placed in silent mode. Thank you. Members, last week we gave a brief overview of the issues that might be considered within this committee, and issues related to Florida military veterans and their families are critical issues, important issues to the state, but also within the purview of our committee. So today we have invited the Florida Department of Veteran Affairs to make a presentation which will cover the range of services provided by the department, particularly the occupancy, staffing, and services of the veterans' nursing homes operated by the state. Bob Ostalos, Deputy Executive Director, will present on behalf of the department. And members, in order to provide sufficient time for your questions and discussion, I'd ask that we hold our questions until the presentation is finished. At the end of the presentation, I will open the meeting to questions as well as member discussion, as members are recognized by the chair. And members, this is your first opportunity to ask questions and make comments after a presentation, so I look forward to those today. Deputy Director Ostalos, you are recognized to proceed.
Appreciate being here. And the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, we are nearly a 1,500 member constitutionally chartered department with a $171 million budget responsible for serving our veterans, which is the third largest veteran population in the nation. We are the premier point of entry for services for Florida's 1.5 million veterans. FDVA operates a network of 9 state veteran nursing homes and provides statewide outreach to connect veterans with their earned services, benefits, and support. The agency Veterans Claims Examiner plays a major role and a direct infusion of $23.9 billion annually into Florida's economy through federal compensation, education, pension and benefits, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, medical services, and military retiree pay. One of the things that we're asked quite a bit is, what is the difference between the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs? And I'm going to highlight the three major differences. While we have the same mission, taking care of veterans, our roles are very different. First, in healthcare, when you look at healthcare services for veterans, it is the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that provides hospital service, outpatient services, home and community-based care to the veterans. FDVA, we focus on institutional long-term care. So assisted living and nursing home services are provided by the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs. For benefits and compensation, it is the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that provides benefits such as disability, education, home loans, and veterans assistance to the veterans. FDVA's role is we advocate on behalf of the veterans to obtain all the benefits that they are entitled to. So we are advocates for the veterans in the state of Florida, working with the VA so they get their services. And lastly, with education, it's the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that provides education benefits, commonly called the GI Bill. But the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, we're a state accrediting agency. So we actually visit the universities, institutions of learning, and we accredit them so that veterans can use their GI Bill in those institutions. Under General Hartzell and Governor DeSantis' leadership, our mission is to advocate for purpose and passion for Florida's veterans and to link them to superior services, benefits, and support. Our vision, what we strive for every day, is that FDVA is the premier point of entry for Florida's veterans to access earned services, benefits, and support. For us to provide services to our veterans in a way to best serve them, we have to understand our veteran population, because all veterans are not alike. And so when you look at Florida's veterans population, we have 1.5 million veterans in the state of Florida. 164,000 are women veterans. That is the fastest growing veteran population in the state. Women veterans need different services. They need to be communicated with in different ways than male veterans. And I'll talk a bit about that more later on in the presentation. If you look at the demographics, almost a quarter of a million veterans are over the age 65, and 384,000 veterans have a disability. That really shows the need for our institutional long-term care services, because those are our veterans who are in need long-term care services. But you have to look at who is receiving these institutional services. World War II veterans, we have 24,000 in the state. We're losing World War II veterans every day, 93,000 Korean War veterans. Those are the veterans who we have in our nursing homes. And the next wave is the Vietnam veterans, 485,000, nearly half a million Vietnam veterans. And now we're starting to see the Vietnam veterans come into our nursing homes. And then lastly, the next wave will be the Gulf War veterans and the Afghan Iraqi veterans, 205,000 Gulf War veterans, 234 Afghanistan Iraqi veterans. These veterans all require different types of services, and they also like to receive services differently. The World War II veterans were fine with going to brick and mortar VA buildings. Vietnam veterans, they came back. They came back, and they're still bitter about the war. Many of them, they have a mistrust for the VA. They were told that Agent Orange didn't impact them as they developed cancers and diseases. So their services are different. And then the Gulf War veterans and the Southwest Asia veterans, right? They prefer home and community-based services. They want services not to come down from Washington, but to come up in the community. And so we have to keep that in mind as we move forward, who we're taking care of and how they prefer services and what services they need. Next is our veteran claim examiners. We have 111 individuals, 72 veteran claim examiners in 49 locations around the state, and then 45 in our benefits and assistance. These are our frontline troops who work with veterans to obtain veteran services, benefits that these veterans have earned. In calendar year 2022, they provided 272,000 veterans with information and or counseling. They processed 35,000 new claims for Florida veterans, brought in $194 million in retroactive benefits for Florida veterans. And with the PAC Act that was passed by the Congress, we're seeing, you all see the commercials on TV for veterans. We're seeing an expansion of veterans who are looking for services. These veteran claim examiners are around the state. This is a very busy slide, I know, but they're very busy people, so I guess it reflects them. This shows where our veteran claim examiners are. They are all across the state of Florida. One of the things that I hope that you take from this presentation is that if there is a veteran who needs services or benefits, it's our role, it's our job, it's our passion to get them their benefits and services. And that applies to your constituents. So if you have a constituent who comes into your office, a veteran or a loved one of a veteran, and they are looking for benefits, they're looking for services from the VA, they need help, send them our way. I'd be happy to connect you with the veteran claim examiner closest to your office, and that's what we do. And we would be happy to take care of your constituents and get those veterans the services and benefits they need. And we do that, of course, at no cost. In addition to our veteran claim examiners, each county has a county veteran service officer, at least one. They are a county employee. And by statute, they must be a wartime veteran. They, like our veteran claim examiners, connect veterans and their families to services. FDVA, we train the county veteran service officers and we accredit them. So their training and accreditation comes through us. The benefits guide, this is a publication that we put out each year. And this has all the services that veterans are entitled to in the state of Florida. It's a very popular booklet. It is also online. And if you would like a box of these for your office, we are happy to share this with you. You could just let us know at FDVA, and we are more than happy to provide you with a box of these. Veterans love them. It's a great resource. It is provided with no taxpayer money. The Florida Veterans Foundation allows us to publish these. They raise money for these, and they support the publishing of these. Let me talk a bit about our state veteran nursing homes. And this slide right here shows our state veteran homes. They are in blue around the state. First, we have a domiciliary in Lake City, which services up to 150 veterans. The domiciliary is basically an assisted living facility. ALF care is stepped down from a nursing home care. So it's someone who doesn't quite need nursing home care, but that veteran needs some help with their activities of daily living. And they are in our domiciliary, which is in Lake City. We also have six state nursing homes around the state. They are in blue, which have been traditionally operating. They are 120 beds each. Last year, we opened two brand new nursing homes, one in Lake Baldwin in Orlando, and the second one was in Port St. Lucie. Though Lake Baldwin is 112 beds, Port St. Lucie is 120 beds. We have two nursing homes on the books to be developed. The first will be in Collier County, and we're projecting about 5 years out. And the second nursing home will be in Marion County. And one of the things that we want to do is Remember, going back to that original slide, who is the population who are going to be using it? We have to start thinking about building nursing homes for the Southwest Asia veterans. Very different from the Vietnam veterans. The Vietnam veterans, you see Agent Orange, you see a lot of PTSD. So you got neurology, dermatology, you've got cancers. Those Southwest Asia veterans, you have multiple traumatic injuries. You have traumatic brain injury, a lot of rehab. So we don't want to build your standard nursing home with just long-term beds. We want to build long-term care communities, and we're working with Collier County and Marion County. We want to have outpatient rehab so that these veterans, if they have wounds that need to be taken care of, they could come in and we could do it on an outpatient basis, or we could do short-term rehab in these buildings, which we really don't do in our homes right now. We want to put in adult daycare into these buildings. Right now, if a veteran comes to us, we could offer them a long-term care bed. But what if we had the option to say, we could keep you in your home longer and you don't have to come into our nursing home now with adult daycare? So we want to put in adult daycare. We want to be able to provide our veterans with expanded services. And the thing about that is, one is, it allows us to provide more services to the veterans so the veterans wins. But the second thing is, it'll diversify our revenue stream so that when we have another COVID come our way, God forbid, we'll be in a healthier position for it because we'll have diversified revenue. So with that, I mentioned COVID. We have had challenges in the past few years. Like every nursing home in the state of Florida, COVID emptied our beds. And then on top of that, the workforce challenge has made it hard to fill those beds. So in the darkest points of COVID, our census dropped down into the 60s. Basically, we were a little bit more than half filled in our buildings. We have been able to move that up. We are now in our traditional nursing homes about 80% census right now. So we still have a third of our beds that need to be filled, but we have moved it up to 80%. And our domiciliary is essentially at full status right now. One of the things that, in addition, so what happened was COVID came in, it reduced our beds. Then the workforce shortage came in, and the private sector's wages shot up. We didn't keep up, so we didn't have competitive wages, which forced us to reduce beds, to reduce occupancy, and to use staffing agency. In the last legislative session, you all provided us with a $5.6 million incentive package so that we could increase the salaries for our direct care staff, our registered nurses, LPNs, and our certified nurse assistants. And it really has made a difference. We are back to hiring. To the end of the fiscal year, so from July 1 to December 31st, we have 123 positions that were vacant July 1 that are now filled in our nursing homes. And out of those 123 positions, 93 of them are CNA, LPNs, and RNs. So we are hiring, but to truly get to the point of being able to fill all our beds to take care of our complete census, including our new homes, that would be 1,102 veterans. We still need to hire about a third of our staff. We do have a waiting list for our homes, and so we are able to bring people in as we hire staff. And so we are continuing to hire staff and move on. In addition, we are working to fully open our two new nursing homes. And our goal is care staff. We're still having difficulty with non-direct care staff. So the people are administrative staff, our office administrative staff. They were not part of the incentive plan, so their salaries lagged a bit behind the private sector. We're still having challenges there. We are working, though, to decrease our staffing agency use. No nursing home wants to use staffing agency personnel. Staffing agency personnel are expensive, especially during COVID. The staffing agencies charged extraordinary amounts. And plus, the care isn't as good as provided by FDVA employees. We want our veterans to receive care by FDVA employees. At the height of our staffing agency use, our homes were using between 90 and 105 agency personnel a day. At the end of December, we're down to between 60 and 75 a day. So we've had a one-third reduction in our staffing agency use. The other thing that we did was we competitively bid out our staffing agency use and renegotiated contracts so that we were able to bring down the cost of our staffing agency personnel so they don't take as much of a bite out of our budget as they were during the height of COVID. What are our goals? So by June 30th, the end of our fiscal year, our goal is to have our six operating nursing homes at near full census. And I think that we can get there. For our Port St. Lucie nursing home, we have 19 residents in it. Our goal is to open two more units and have 60 residents in that building. And so it'd be about half full. For our Lake Baldwin building, our goal is to have that over one-third full, or about 44 beds filled of the 112. The other thing is to continue to hire and continue to move out staffing agency use. And our goal is that by the end of the fiscal year, that we'd be down to no more than 30 staffing agency personnel in our buildings per day, with the eventual goal of moving all staffing agency back to a relationship. Our relationship with staffing agencies should be truly you're there for the call off, you're there for the vacation, you're there for the emergency. You're not there to supplement our staffing every day, and that's going to be our goal. Admission criteria. I've put this slide up because people are going to come to your office and they're going to say, how do I get my loved one in a nursing home in the state of Florida into a veterans nursing home? There's three criteria that need to be done to fill out an application for our state veteran nursing home. One is the veteran needs to be honorably discharged. Second, the veteran has to be a Florida resident. And third, they need a certificate of need from the VA that they need nursing home care. Once a veteran has those three, they could fill out an application and we make a determination if we could take care of them and we have a bed, and then we would admit them into our nursing homes. Under General Hartzell's leadership, he has the department focus on two very special populations. The first is women veterans and the second is our Vietnam veterans. And on women veterans, when he came into office, he created a task force. We went around the state. We talked to women veterans around the state. And two Fridays ago, we just established a permanent committee to advise us. Some of the things that we found is that we don't communicate as well to women veterans as we can. It is interesting around the state. We heard from a number of women veterans who served in the military who don't consider themselves veterans. They say, I was in an administrative role, or I didn't go to war, so I'm not a veteran. We have to communicate to them that they are veterans. The other thing, too, is our services. We got to make sure that we tailor our services for women veterans. We have women veterans in our nursing homes. They're a minority, but are we meeting their needs? Homelessness is another issue that we found around the state. Male veterans, when they're homeless, tend to be on their own. Women veterans have children. And so what we find is many of our shelters don't take children. So the women veterans who are homeless wind up sleeping in their cars. So we have to tailor our homeless services so that we are taking care of our women veterans. And so this is a major focus for General Hartzell. And again, we have that task force or that advisory committee providing us input. Vietnam veterans. Vietnam veterans is another priority for us at FDVA. And really, we're not looking for the Vietnam veterans who are members of the VFW or the American Legion. The Vietnam veterans that we want to get to are the ones who came back from the war. They're bitter about the war. They're bitter about how they're treated. They threw their uniform away, and they want nothing to do with the government or the VA. They are isolated, and they are aging out, and they need long-term care services. But at this point, they don't know where to go, and I'm not even sure they know how to ask for it. So one of the things that General Hartzell has directed us to do is we're doing town hall meetings around the state. And what we're trying to do is to draw these veterans out based on toxic exposure town hall meetings and have them come to these meetings, connect them with veteran claim examiners, let them know what services they have, and so that we could connect them to services. Before I came to FDVA, I was in the nursing home profession, and I saw we would have Vietnam veterans come to our nursing homes, and if only they had services, they wouldn't have had to be admitted. So our goal is to try to draw them out and get them the services that they have earned and deserve. Veteran suicide is another priority issue. I don't have to tell you about the problem of veteran suicide around the state and around the country. What the legislature in the last session did was create the Overwatch program. The Overwatch program is allowing us to do training around the state to veteran claim examiners, county veteran service officers, veteran service officers of veteran organizations. Those are our frontline troops dealing with veterans. And so we're doing full-day training around the state where we teach them to identify a veteran who's a suicide risk. How do you handle that veteran? And how do you get them into services? And we're excited about that. The training starts January 20th in Jacksonville and goes through May, and we're doing it in 8 sites around the state. In addition, we're working with Sachs Media on developing messaging, and we're working with Medal of Honor winners to do a public service announcement about veteran suicide that we will be broadcasting around the state. Last legislative session, there were 2 bills of priority for veterans. The Veteran Suicide Prevention Training Pilot Program, which I just talked about, was one. And secondly is the Education Certification Pathway for Veterans. This is the bill that allows veterans who want to become teachers to use their military service to count towards that. And the Department of Education has set that program up, and we do have veterans who are applying for that program. My last 2 slides deal with our partners. We cannot do this alone. We have incredible partners that the legislature has created to work with us. The first is the Florida Veterans Foundation, which you all created in 2008. And the best way I could describe the Florida Veterans Foundation is it is the safety net. When a veteran is in crisis and can't find help anywhere else, the foundation helps him out. So for example, if a veteran can't go to work because their car is broke and they can't earn money for their family, the foundation will investigate it, hire a mechanic, fix the car, and get that veteran's life back online. They've helped 2,812 veterans last year with $373,000 in emergency funds and other benefits for veterans. Veterans Florida is the second direct service organization that was created in 2014 by you all. And their mission in life is to help active duty transition into jobs in Florida, or veterans who want to move to Florida to get jobs in Florida. They do an incredible job. 250 veterans last year received entrepreneurship and industry training. And they manage a program called SkillBridge, which allows an active duty person to spend the last 6 months working in the private sector. The DOD pays for it. And they can work in the private sector and transition into the civilian community while they're still on active duty. Last year, they had 85 veterans go through that, of which 18 became state troopers, working at Florida Highway Patrol. So it's a great program to bring veterans into our workforce. So with that, that's an overview of the department and our direct service organizations, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Members, we will now go into questions and discussion. For a better dialogue, as you're recognized, you may ask a question to the presenter, or you may make a point of discussion for the other members. Representative Hawkins, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you for what you do. That's a tough job. When somebody would come into one of our district offices and talk about, we explain they need to meet the three criteria. What would be a time frame we could tell them to get the certificate of need from the VA? And then if they get that, how long does it take for you guys to get them placed on average?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. I appreciate that question. So so normally, let's go to normal times. Let's go post-COVID. Right now, we have empty beds in our facilities. And our waiting list right now, we have approximately 39 veterans who have applications done who are waiting to come in. And we're just looking to hire staff. So the turnaround time can be fairly quickly. It really does depend, though, on whether or not, in normal times, whether or not we have beds that are full. And usually our homes are full, and so you have to wait for a bed to open up, which happens fairly regularly. So it's hard for me to give you a date. We generally try to work with the families because we understand if a veteran needs nursing home care, they probably can't stay in the home at that point. So we do work with the families. We do try to get them in as quickly as we can. Or what we do is try to find them temporary placement in a home, in a private sector home that does VA care. So I guess my response is it's hard to give you a time frame. But we do work with the family member to try to get them placed somewhere because we understand.
Representative Hawkins, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one follow-up. On the certificate of need, do you know about how long that usually takes to work through the federal to get that for them? Is it a pretty lengthy process, or is it faster now after COVID? Or?
Yes, sir.
Deputy Executive Director, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It depends on the veteran. So if the veteran is already in the VA system, then it's a matter of them having a VA doctor evaluate them that they need nursing home care. If the veteran is not in the VA system, then what we have to do is get them into the VA system. And that could be a lengthy process. It could be weeks, could be months, depending on if they have all their paperwork. So it depends on where the veteran is with the U.S. Veterans Affairs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have.
Representative Holcomb, you're recognized.
How you doing, Bob? Go Navy. So to my fellow representatives, I was a commissioner for 8 years, and I would implore you to put a number in your phone to someone, whether it's the VFW, the American Legion, or your county VSO, or Bob's number, that you can, when you meet someone on the street, some veteran, and they say, I need help, you can say, start here. Because there is I've been in the military 16 years and 50 weeks. Anniversary is coming up. But there is so much I don't know about this because I haven't experienced it. I haven't lived the veteran life outside of the military. So there is so much to know from that standpoint. So for Bob, one of the things that, like I said, if someone comes up to me, get someone pointed in the right direction, and you said you're doing town halls around the state. There is so much information that needs to be gained, so if you could just keep that up, and whether it's farmed out to local groups or what have you, keep that information train going, because, you know, you're still learning probably some things, and there's a million things that I need to know, and some of our county VSOs need to know, and our VFWs need to know. Some of them can raise money. Some of them are great with healthcare benefits. Some of them do other things very well. But two questions for you. How can we help? Can we help with budget? Can we help with any other things? And then you mentioned a lot of nursing home vacancies. Is that because of the manpower to serve those veterans in the beds? or is it just a matter of getting more people to apply and to reach out for help?
Thank you, Representative.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Representative, for that question. And first, to your point about having a number in your phone, our veteran claim examiners and your county VSOs are the right person for you all to reach out to, or you call me, and I could point you in that direction, because as the representative said, and I talked about it at the beginning, you have to understand the veteran and how they want to receive services to really help that veteran. For instance, when you talk about the younger veterans, those from the Southwest Asia veterans, right? Just giving them the VA clinic isn't what they're looking for. The newer veterans, they want alternative treatments. They want HBOT, the oxygen therapy treatment. They want service dogs. They want working with out on ranches and things like that. So veteran claim examiners understand what type of veteran they're working with and can provide the answers. What type of assistance can the legislature do for us? So I think one of the things is that we are working hard to get our programs back. We still have 158 beds in our state state nursing homes that we still need to fill. We are still down about a third of our staff. If you look at our staff right now, we had 511 open vacancies at the beginning of the fiscal year. We're down to 418 of those. And so we're still trying to hire nurses and RNs, LPNs, and CNAs. The money that you provided us is certainly very, very important for us. I think trying to get our non-direct care staff competitive, the non-nurses, is going to be important for us. Last year, you all provided us with $41 million, basically to supplement our nursing home care. Traditionally, we make money on our nursing homes. Our revenue exceeds our expenses by $3 to $5 million. And we're going to get us back there. But last year, because of our decreased beds, you had to float the nursing home program, if you will. We still are probably going to need about $27 million for next year before we're finally back into a position. And then I think the other thing, too, is that you'll probably see some legislation about some of the things I talked about, where we expand our services, where we could provide more to veterans than just our long-term care services. And you'll probably see that coming your way.
Just one follow-up.
You recognize.
Bob, we had a meeting in my office a couple weeks ago, and for those of you who aren't familiar with the housing market with veterans, when a veteran goes to buy a home, they're going to be put at the bottom of the list if they're getting a VA loan. It's just the nature of the business. A conventional loan is the most attractive to the seller, and FHA is the next most attractive, and the VA, with all the hurdles that it creates, is the least attractive to a seller. So we had talked about some ability to maybe fix that on the rental side, some way to, you know, get the veteran to the top of the heap on the rental side, because that's usually your junior military member is needing a rental unit. So I look forward to having that conversation with you going into the future, and maybe we can look at a bill in the future. But thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I found it very informative. I have to say, at page 11 on the slide, I'm a little disturbed that for housing programs, one of the criteria is an honorable discharge only. I believe there's five, and I'm not a vet, so, but I believe there's five different discharges from the military. I am a criminal defense lawyer, and I've dealt with a lot of vets who have had a less than honorable discharge, and you've spoken a lot about mental health problems. So I'm just wondering why that population who has a less than honorable discharge is not served with the HOMES program.
Thank you, Chair. and thank you, Representative, for that question. And that is a very good question, and you have hit a point. Some people receive less than honorable discharges because of their experience in the military,
right?
PTSD led to alcoholism, led to a dishonorable discharge. Or with our women veterans, the number of women veterans who have suffered military sexual trauma, and that has led them to a less than honorable discharge.
Representative Gottlieb.
So as a follow-up to that, is that a national criteria or a Florida criteria that we could expand upon?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. That's a national, that's a VA criteria. But one of the things that we do, Representative, is that just because you have a dishonorable discharge, we do not turn you away. So what we try to do is if someone doesn't meet that criteria, but they need nursing home care and they were a veteran, we do connect them with our veteran claim examiner. And if our veteran claim examiner can upgrade their discharge, which they actively work to do, then we work to try to upgrade their discharge so that they can be admitted into our homes.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Bob. Thank you for your service as well. And to my colleague veterans and those in the audience, I thank you for your service. I know you have touched in the area of the wait list. Actually, one of my colleagues have touched on that. But I need some clarification on the wait list that you have. How long is the wait list? And is it a lack of personnel only, or does it have to do with funding as well? And also another part of my question, I'm going to try to tie in both questions into one. You mentioned one of the needs for the women veterans when they go to the shelters. You don't have, they cannot take children, which is very important. I'm glad that you are working on that. What are some of the other pressing needs that you are seeing for women veterans that we can address as well? Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative, for that question. And thank you for everything that you do for veterans. You've got a great bill, and we appreciate your legislation, which is personal to me because I went through being a corpsman. So let me talk a bit about the wait list. Right now, for all our homes in our domiciliary, so this is our nine veteran homes in the domiciliary, we have 34 veterans who have completed their application, who meet the criteria for admission. And we are trying to move them into beds. We have 120 applications that are in the process. So they're still pulling all their paperwork together and all that. About half of those, or 18 completed, 59 in process, are in our traditional, our six operating nursing homes. And the other half are in our new homes. And again, for these, it's really a function of staff. One of the things that we don't want to do is we don't want to admit these residents and use agency staff to take care of them, because agency staff does not provide as good care. So it's a function of us hiring staff. When we are able to hire staff, we open up more beds, we open up more units. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Rev. So women veterans, it was the task force was very opening on what we heard from around the state. And one is that for our women veterans, we have to make sure that those in our nursing homes, that we're meeting their needs. Even little things, like we have veteran service organizations who come in who bring gifts and things for the residents, but it's generally male type geared because that's the majority of our building. So making sure we're meeting the needs in their homes. I think women want to be respected for their services. And one of the things that we see is in our VA facilities that they put the OBGYN clinic in the middle of all the other services where they have to walk through all the male veterans to go for their services. they'd like to see their services more discreetly placed in our clinics. I think they want to be recognized. You know, when you see some of the things that came up, when you see the traditional billboard of veterans, what do you see? You see gray-haired men saluting, right? We have to be inclusive of women veterans. We have to make them know that they are veterans and that they serve their country and they've earned the same benefits as us. So those are, and the other thing too is the military sexual trauma. The military sexual trauma, it's that they are able to receive the services that they need to combat that. And so those are probably the highlights that we heard out of the task force.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'll make it very quick. We know there are some medical medics and corpsmen who are looking for jobs. Is there a call to action to get them to apply for some of those positions in order for you to fill your vacancies?
Yes, Representative. We would love to have corpsmen and military medical personnel working in our homes. Veterans Florida, our direct service organization, they have been working to get our military corpsmen in. But, and I think that your legislation goes a long way. Your legislation is actually very personal to me because when I came off active duty the first time, I was a corpsman. I spent 4 years, 2 years on an aircraft carrier and 2 years with the Marines, I did a lot as a corpsman on a ship and with the Marines. And when I came off active duty, I applied for a job with an ambulance. And they told me, yeah, that's, and I brought up my transcripts and everything. And they said, oh, that's great, but you have to take this EMT course with people coming out of high school who've never seen any medicine, start from the very beginning because you have to be certified as an EMT, which is an incredible wasted resource, right? But the ability to allow people to take their military medical training and to use that right in our healthcare workforce where we have shortages, I think is so important. It's so important to have veterans move to Florida that way and to supplement our military, our healthcare system.
Thank you. Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Bob. Thank you for your service. I want to thank my colleague, Representative Holcomb, an honorable man. And you brought up something, Representative, that I wanted to touch on. I'm a businessman. I've bought and sold a lot of properties over the years. And one thing that occurred to me when he was speaking about the VA loans is, you know, I've been guilty of this too. You see offers come in like, oh, this is a VA. And you're like, you know what, that's going to be a disaster. Don't go down that path. And candidly, it should be the other way around. We should be lucky to have the VA as an investor or a businessman funding a loan. It should be, oh, that's going to be fast-tracked. If they're a pre-qualified VA, this should be a no-brainer, quick, done deal. So I would encourage you guys to try to see how we could do that, because with the influx of people coming to this state, which is what I'm going to touch on next, I think that's a way you could really score some big points in this in the community. I've been very outspoken that I believe public safety is the most fundamental function of government, and akin to that, if not more important, is what we're doing with our veterans. My brother currently serves in the Air Force for 15, 16 years, and so a lot of things have been brought to my attention that I probably otherwise wouldn't have noticed. And something I wanted you to expand on a little bit for me is what is going on with disabled veterans that are moving to this state. As we know, a lot of people are coming to the greatest state in the nation right now, and we're grateful to have them, especially our veterans. How are we, what are we doing to help get them on their feet, get them back into society, doing things productive, happy people that have a purpose again. So disabled veterans and their families, and also we have spouses and children of deceased veterans moving here, you know, within a certain period of time. How are we taking care of them and helping them get on their feet? Obviously, their father and mother, sacrificed everything for our country, so we can be in here and talk about this stuff, to be honest. So that's something that's important to me, is how are we getting people that are coming here? We want them here. what are we doing to give them a pathway to success and help their families and children as well? Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative, for that question. That is a very good question, because we want veterans to come to Florida. This is a veteran-friendly state. I think one of the things that attracts veterans to Florida is our private-public partnership that we have throughout the state. As I talked about the Southwest Asia veterans, right, they don't want services coming down from D.C. that's uniform standardized, right? They want alternative therapies. They want homegrown benefits. And there's a lot of services that it's veterans taking care of veterans, right? Veterans are creating organizations to bring people down here. And one of the things that we don't want to do at FDVA is hinder that, because I think that that's what makes us successful. Are the programs that are out there in your communities. And you all know those programs that are out there that are specific to your communities for veterans. That's what attracts those veterans down here. I think a strong long-term care system for those veterans that's responsive to them, so that when they need long-term care services, they come to us. And I think the other thing, Representative, you and I, we've talked about it. There's that quirk, if you will, in our disability statute. Whereas for scholarship funds, if to receive scholarship funds, you have to live in Florida for 1 year before you're 100% disabled. So if you're 100% disabled, you could obtain scholarship funds. Now, that law used to work previously because people would move to Florida, they would apply for disability, and it would take about a year. They'd get their 100% rating, they'd be eligible for scholarship funds. But the military has changed how it provides disability ratings. So now many people get that when they're coming off active duty, and they're already rated. So if you have a sailor in Norfolk who intends to move for Florida, they get their disability rating in Norfolk. When they move to Florida, they're not eligible for scholarship funds, because you have to live in the state for a year. And we've talked about fixing that, and I think that'll be a benefit to our veterans.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Bob, for that explanation. And yes, that is something that I'm excited to work with you guys on. And the final comment I want to make, and it's not really anything substantive or question, other than just to make the point that, and you touched on it a little earlier, mental health and addiction is a major issue. I'm a former drinker. I'm very open about my story. And I know the battles that me, a businessman with all the resources and family, and I mean, I'm very blessed. It was a struggle for me, you know, to go through what I went through. So it's so important that we recognize how primary and how paramount, sorry, the word, that this problem is. And it leads to so many other issues, my friends in the criminal justice world and on down the line. So I would just like to extend the offer out that if there's ideas and things that we can do in that area, I would love to be part of the solutions, the think tank, so to speak, to provide some help and some assistance, and you know, let them know that, hey, this is, you know, there's solutions, there's things we can do, and we have to recognize that these people have dealt with tremendous trauma and things that I hope all of us hope we never have to see or experience. So God bless you for what you're doing, and I'm excited to be working with you and your team. And General Hartzell is a great man, and so thank you for being here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative,
may I just
yes, you are recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just want to say, Representative, that in this room we have an extraordinary resource for those veterans who are in the criminal system, who have been, you know, because of their PTSD, because of alcoholism, because of the military, they've got caught up in the criminal system. And we have veterans who are trying to work with them in a criminal system to get them the help they need and move them back in society. Colonel DJ Reyes from Tampa over here runs an incredible program, and he would be a great resource to work with you all on that. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the presentation. Thank you for the work that you do for our veterans every day. It's very much appreciated. As I'm sure you know, since COVID, healthcare institutions throughout the state have been struggling with an area that it sounds like you've had some success with, and that's getting the nurses from staffing agencies and traveling nurses back onto the books of the organization and away from the agency. It's a huge gap of cost. And you know, as representative of our state, I think it's important that we talk about the costs that different agencies incur. And it sounds like you've had a lot of success with reducing that. I think you mentioned a reduction of 30%. Plans to reduce it further. Can you speak a little bit about how you've been successful doing that? What are you doing to make that impact?
Yeah.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, thank you for that. It's been the bane of our existence. Staffing agencies have a role in healthcare. Again, you need a relationship with a staffing agency for your last minute call offs when your nurses go on vacation and things like that. And that was the traditional role that the nursing home profession has had with staffing agencies. What we saw during COVID was as the beds dropped, people didn't come to work, and then the workforce shortage, staffing agencies became permanent staff. And we saw them charge high amounts of money. And I'll give you an example. So we pay in the state of Florida at our veterans nursing homes about $17 an hour for a CNA. That's our rate right now. And $17 an hour for a CNA is a fairly competitive rate. We are fairly competitive with the private sector at that rate. Right? When during COVID, staffing agencies were charging between $40 and $45 an hour. $17 an hour for our staff, $40 to $45 an hour. And we had to pay it because we have minimum staffing requirements. And they also, they don't work for us. So they don't know our veterans, right? They don't know their needs. And so the care just isn't the same. We have started moving it out. We still have a lot more work to do because we want to get back to that normal relationship. I think the way that we've been moving it is, one is we competitively bid out our staffing agency contracts. And then we had to renegotiate a few for specific homes. So now, when you look at $40 to $45 an hour, our staffing agencies for a CNA on a day shift is between $23 and $32 is what we're paying. So we were able to reduce the cost of what we have to spend with our staffing agencies. Then I think the other thing, too, is our administrators don't want to use staffing agency. We want to use our own people. And so there's been a real good commitment that as we hire, we move people out. And as I said, we've been able to hire 93 nurse positions that were vacant that we can now fill with staffing agency. And really, there's no magic formula to it. It's just grinding down. It's getting out there. It's hiring people, hire a person, move an agency person out. I think the other thing, too, that we are implementing to move staffing agency out is we're putting a time limit on how long people can work in our nursing homes. During COVID, I mean, we've had people working in our nursing homes as staffing agencies for a year, right? And you know what? God bless them because they make more money working for our staffing agencies. Well, we now have we've implemented that they could work in our building for 90 days worth of hours, which is about 520 hours. After 520 hours, that nurse or CNA, they have to decide if you want to continue to work in our building and take care of veterans, join our staff. If not, go work down the street at another nursing home. So there's no easy way. It's just grind them out. Grind them out.
Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I had another question, but something you just said concerned me. Mm-hmm. I know you're letting them only stay for 90 days, but because you're missing one-third of your staff, you have veterans that are in really dire situations and don't have beds. So you're kind of in a really bad position. So I understand why you're doing that, but what else can be done in terms of wages? Because I, for me, it's more important for me to get that veteran in that bed, whether or not it's your employee or somebody else's employee. Some veteran is in dire straits right now. Their family's in dire straits because you're having this tug of war with the staffing agencies. And so is that raising the salaries of your staff? Because I don't know how, it's not just your problem. It's every nursing home. It's every hospital. I have Cleveland Clinic in my district. So would raising the salaries of those employees matter? Because all we're doing is not getting veterans the care they need when they're waiting for a bed.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. And healthcare is intricate, for sure. And you reflect the challenges that we face. I think the salaries for our LPNs, RNs, and CNAs are right now in line with the private sector, and they are competitive. It's just a matter of being able to hire. I think that our other staff, it's important that we hire our indirect care staff in our buildings. You know, for instance, I'll give you an example. So our human resource people who work in our buildings, who do all the interviewing, right, their salaries are low. I have high turnover. Well, when I lose my human resource person, all of a sudden the interviews slow down. So I think helping our support staff is important. And Representative, we wrestle with that same question too, right? It's about putting veterans in the beds, but it's also about quality care too. If we put a veteran in our bed, we want to make sure that we could provide the highest quality care, and we want to have the right people to do that. And that's what we wrestle with. If you look at the star ratings in our buildings, right, we had one building that had high agency use. At the height of COVID, probably half our people in that building were agency use. It's our lowest quality building for quality of care. And I think that there is a correlation. When our staff do it, the veterans get better treatment. So we wrestle with that too. We could put residents in the bed, but we want to make sure they're getting the highest quality care.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I understand your struggle. I just know veterans who are, any kind of care would be better than them laying in their bed all day in their home, not getting any care, and that's what's happening. So I hope you'll figure that out. But I have another question. So the biggest issue I get in my community, and I have a lot of vets, and I have a lot of active duty, and I guess this doesn't necessarily fall under your purview, but it does in terms of advocacy. Not being able to get a cavity filled, not being able to find a dentist, the red tape to get any kind of service. Literally, we had to have a community member drive a serviceman to Miami because that was the only place that they could get the dental care. So you have CVSOs in every county, and I want to know how many, because I've only met one in my county, and he's been great, but he's one. And then how many, you have a lot of offices for caseworkers, but I want to know those ratios, because veterans are very frustrated. They can't get, you have services, but they have to fight to get them. And I understand that that's more of a federal, but you are the advocacy arm. So what do you have in place for that? And what's the staffing ratios for those positions?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. So the first is dental services. Dental services is frustrating. And again, that is the federal VA that determines that. And what we try to do is we do try to work with partners to try to fill the gap as much as we can. There's a wonderful program where dentists volunteer their services, and they put on clinics around the state, and they provide free dental services for veterans. And it's a fantastic program. They were here in Tallahassee. They come into an area, they spend 3 days or so providing dental services. We've worked with the Florida Dental Association on dentists volunteering their services for dental services. But I mean, it's filler in a bigger problem. The bigger problem is how do you get dental services as a benefit for veterans? And we agree with you. The second question that you had is our ratios for our veteran claim examiners. I don't have that answer exactly how many veterans or veteran claim examiners service in an area, but I will get that for you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, and I appreciate everything you do, and I'm sorry if I seem tough on the questions. I just deal with the dental situation all the time. And thank you, Chair, for indulging my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Jacques, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, sir, for your service and for your service to our veterans. Regarding women veterans, you mentioned the advisory group that was recently created and the town halls that were conducted in 2022. Where can we get more information about the current activities of the advisory board? Is it something we would be able to go on our website?
Sure.
And additionally, is there a way to disseminate that information to members if these town halls are happening in our area so that we can let our constituents know?
You're recognized.
Okay. Yes, Representative, the task force that went around the state actually did a report. It's on our website, but I will share that with committee staff, and they could distribute it to you all. The other thing, too, is that this advisory group, what they decided to do in their inaugural meeting in Jacksonville is they would meet around the state, and they would also take input from local women veterans or anyone of interest. We have also spouses who serve on it, too, of interest who are willing to come to that. And so I could get you schedules for that also.
Thank you.
Representative Griffiths, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Deputy Director. We've touched on the subject of the wages. Healthcare, as you mentioned, is very intricate. I've had the opportunity to serve on several boards at our hospitals locally. And the wages through COVID exploded. Travel nurses can make what lawyers make per hour. You mentioned CNAs at $17 an hour as a competitive wage in this market. I'm not sure that a wage study wouldn't be appropriate. You can make $18 an hour at Chick-fil-A today. So it's very hard to get people to work in that type of environment and those types of settings for those types of wages. So I'm just wondering if we're still below the threshold of where we need to be to attract those quality healthcare workers. So, thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. You know, I would say, Representative, that is a good point. I think what happened was in the last legislative session, you all realized that we had to increase the wages. And I think you did make us competitive because, again, we are hiring folks at these positions. But I think it's kind of like you said initially, it's an intricate market. It's dynamic. We may be ahead of the curve today, but you're right. Things are changing so fast that by the end of the legislative session, we may not. So I think it is incumbent on us to continue to look at this. One of the ways that we measure it is how are we doing as far as hiring goes? And so what we saw was the incentive plan actually kicked in August. Because we had to get budget amendments and all that. And by the time it finally came into effect, it was August. And you all gave us not only increasing salaries, but you allowed us to do sign-on bonuses. First time we've been able to do sign-on bonuses. Shift differentials, right? We use more agency at night and second shift, right? So now we're able to pay a shift differential to encourage our staff to go. And I think what we do is we have been tracking our hiring. And in October, November, we were hiring very well. December, we went down because it's the holidays, and we expect that. We're going to continue to track that in January and February. And I think as long as we're hiring, we're going to be doing okay. If we start to see that the private sectors, we're becoming uncompetitive with the private sector, we will come back and we will let you know that.
Ranking Member Daly, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Deputy Director. Good to see you as always, and thank you for your presentation, your time with us this morning. Mine is just a comment, really. I have gone to your team multiple times in just the last couple of years, and it's usually when I can't find a solution at the VA or there's not a standard solution, and your team has always been very dynamic, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. Whereas the VA, hey, if it's not one of these columns, we can't really do anything for you. It may not even have anything to do with your organization, but you help, you know, walk that individual, that veteran, through an issue with some other state agency, whatever it is. But your goal and your mission has always been to assist that veteran, and you do it very, very well. So I just wanted to say thank you to you and your team for doing that and for putting up with all of my phone calls. Appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Tuck, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Deputy Director. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate everything you do for our veterans, and it's really important for our state, so I appreciate it. You mentioned the certification pathways as one of the bills we did last year. Do we have any data or feedback on how that's going? Veterans like it? What's going on with that? Do we have any data there?
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative, for that question. Sorry, I jumped the gun here. We have been looking at that program because what we found is that several hundred veterans have put in for it and 10 have been approved. And so we actually, after the Senate committee meeting, we've reached out to the Department of Education to sit down with them because they actually administer the program for us. And so the question is, the veterans who put in for it, did they put in for it, not get accepted, and then drop out, or are they still in the process? Because they, in addition, they have to test to get the temporary certificate. So what we need to know is, are they still in the process and just moving along, or did they get discouraged and drop out because they didn't understand the program? If those veterans dropped out because they didn't understand the program, then FDVA has a role to educate them on how to go through the process. If they're really still working it, then we need to let the Department of Education get along with that. But we have reached out to them. Our purpose is to work with them and to get as many veterans through that process as we can. Thanks, Representative.
Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Bob. Good to see you. Two things. One, are your employees members of FRS? And then is your benefit package, would you say it's commensurate with what they would get in the private sector?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, our veterans are state employees, and except for some OPS staff, they do receive benefits. And our benefits are very rich. They do like our benefits. And so what that means is that we tend to attract older workers, if you will, who are more, our benefits mean more to them. Which, when you're talking about CNAs making $17 an hour, benefits aren't as important, if you will. If they could go down the street and make $17.50, they'll probably go down the street and make $17.50. Although I do think that we're a much better environment to work in, and there's something to it. So yes, they have attractive benefits that is helpful in our recruiting for our higher level staff, but on our low level staff, not so much.
Representative.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then also, would you say that your shift schedules are commensurate with what they would see in the private sector?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, our shift schedules mirror the private sector.
Representative Dunkley, you're recognized.
Hi, Deputy Director. Thank you so much for the presentation this morning. Very educational, well thought. In regards to how our service-connected disabilities, and I know, again, it's from the federal that looks at that, but has the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, have we looked at how can we bolster that for our veterans? I know for me as a veteran, I at one time had contemplated going out of the state because I was in North Carolina and I saw how quickly their claims were being looked at. And so me living here in Florida, that was not happening for me. And so have we looked at how, and if I can answer my constituent, because that's most of what I get from people even before joining the legislature, that was the conversation we had. So is there something the state is looking at as to how we can bolster that for our veterans for service-connected disability and how our claims are looked at?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, that is a really good question, and that is a major role of us to get those veterans who are eligible and have earned disability pay to get them their disability benefits. I think there's two roles where we can play in that and where we do. The first is that, and you stated, Representative, that you've been through the disability process. I think the first thing is to educate veterans that you can't do this yourself. The VA process is extremely complex. It's difficult to understand. As you know, they send letters back on disability, and you read them and you go, what do they mean? I have no idea. And so I think the first thing is that when a veteran comes to you and they want to apply for disability, my first question is always, are you working with somebody, right, an expert? And so I think providing them our veteran claim examiners, access to our veteran claim examiners is important because they know how to work veterans through the process. So that's one way that we try to move the process. I think the other way, too, is that we have extremely good relationship with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, with VisionAid, which is the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs in Florida and South Georgia. And we work very closely with them when we see bottlenecks. So as we see bottlenecks, we'll work with them and we'll try to assist them in clearing up bottlenecks as best we can. But I will tell you, COVID slowed a lot down. The USDVA went to virtual hearings and all that, as you know, so that slowed it down. And I think the other thing, too, is that the PAC Act is also slowing the federal VA process down, just because now with all the commercials that you're seeing, more and more veterans are applying for disability benefits than we've normally seen. And so that is slowing up the process. But again, to respond to your question, two roles is, one is making sure people have help, professional help moving through the process. And secondly, is us working with the USDVA.
Representative, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry for not saying thank you earlier too for recognizing me. Another question is, with the Afghan-Iraq vets seems the fourth largest in our state, are we, and I know you mentioned about how the needs and how you communicate to those groups. Are we studying anything to how do we communicate to those veterans? Because they're the social medias, they're the different areas that they communicate. And typically, I, as a vet, I get my, whatever information I get is through emails. And so are we looking at any other way of communicating or having the organizations like our county VSO offices communicate in another way that will engage the Afghan and Iraqi vets in making sure they understand their claims and what's out there and available to them here in the state of Florida?
You're recognized.
Yes, Representative, you're right. It's a whole different way of communicating. Now it was you could just put things on Facebook. Now it's Instagram. It was TikTok, and so on. And so we have to look at different ways of getting to them. I think the primary thing with the Southwest Asia veterans, we went around the state two years back, and we met with various groups around the state who are providing services. And I think one of the things that we found is there is incredible resources for these veterans out there in the community that is being done by veterans in the community that is focused on those veterans in the community. And, you know, for instance, we have ranches who help veterans with PTSD, which do extraordinary programs. The University of Florida traumatic brain injury clinic that they have out there is incredible. Our prosthetics programs down in Tampa, our high oxygen bariatric chamber programs around the state. Those are all being done outside of the VA, the federal VA. So when you talked about World War II veterans, right? World War II veterans were very simple. You could work with the VA in the clinic, and then you work with the American Legion, VFW, and so on, and you can get to them. That's not the case anymore. And so one of the things that we found is that you have these great groups doing extraordinary things in their communities, but everybody's in a silo. And so when we talk about our mission of the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, it's how do we communicate our information to those groups out there who are doing great work in the community, the bigger picture, so they're not operating on their own. And that's one of the things that we've been modifying our communications on and how we reach out to those groups.
Representative, you're
Thank you, Chair. So I would just love to offer myself, because in my community, I am that group. I come from a very diverse and Caribbean community, and I've been engaging those people about what, you know, to come together as a group of Caribbean and American veterans. And so I'd love to be able to be part of that conversation whenever you have elevated it, you know, to help in any way that I can. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, we still have some time remaining, so I'm going to open it up to a second bite at the apple for questions and comments. Representative Holcomb, you're recognized.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob. And I appreciate all the comments and questions from everyone. You know, anytime that we put this issue to the forefront, whether it's people who are watching on TV or the folks here, I just think it helps, you know, move the ball down the field. But I did want to bring up through the conversation, spurred a couple more thoughts. My congressman used to have a veteran stand down in our community, and that could be anything from bringing in the VA bus to actual medical care, to simple as haircuts, or folks who hire vets have a table at an event like that. So that's something that we can do. We can help work with our Congress folk to bring to those local assets to bear. For the folks that are living in you know, that are homeless, that's always a more difficult aspect of it, but. And even hiring can be done there, and possibly some small medical procedures. So that's something we could work on very quickly. But to some of the other points, working with the women and working with the Vietnam, the greatest counselors and the greatest help there are going to be other women veterans and other Vietnam veterans. You know, I was a very little baby, and some of you may not have even been born yet, when the Vietnam veterans came home. And I've come home from overseas, so I can't even imagine what their situation was. But to be spit on, to be called baby killers, all of that kind of stuff, that's a whole nother ballgame from what I experienced. So, yeah, it's going to take a Vietnam veteran to really understand what they went through and the things that they're dealing with 50 years later, maybe 45 years later. And then one final thing. On discharges, you know, we just went through in the military, we're at a period now where we can't recruit anymore. And it's because of the leadership that's happening right now. Folks are administratively discharged because of a shot. We've had what's happened in Afghanistan, affecting, as you said, Southwest Asia. That's affected people who have been out and are still in. So it's a big thing that's happening right now, too. So need to be cognizant of all that and everything that we're going on with our veterans, but I appreciate what you're doing, Bob, and give the hammer my best.
Thank you, Representative. May I respond?
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate that. Vietnam veterans, it's extraordinary what they went through and what they deserve. I joined the Navy in 1976, the year after Vietnam fell. My first duty station was Parris Island, and I was a corpsman, when I would do my night ambulance duty, we'd get called to housing all the time, and our NCOs, our junior officers, all served in Vietnam, and they would domestic abuse, they would beat their dogs, they would wander out in the swamps, we would have to get them, right? And we didn't know everything that they went through. And we would say, oh, that's just old Gunny, you know? But they were hurting inside. When I joined the Navy, I wasn't allowed to wear my uniform off base. Not because of Russian spies or anything like that, because of how the population treated servicemen. So what these Vietnam veterans went through is something that I thank God every day that our veterans don't go through that again. And so we owe it to them to find them and to get them the services that they earned. Thank you.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob, let me say that I echo the sentiment of my colleagues, Ranking Member Dan Daly. You have worked your heads off for veterans, and I sincerely appreciate your service and the work that you are doing. You have been grilled this morning, and you held your ground. You answered all the questions, and I want everyone to know how hard you're working for our veterans, because I've called you on Saturday. You have worked on the weekends, weekdays, in order to provide us with the information that we need in order to best serve our veterans. So I am so grateful and thankful for your service, and I look forward to continuing to working with you in order for our veterans to get what they deserve, because they have put their lives on the line for us, and this is the time that we need to be there for them and their families. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Representative. I have great leaders. Governor DeSantis being the only governor who's a combat veteran himself understands us. General Hartzell, I try to keep up with General Hartzell. He is the hardest working person I've ever met. We have great leadership at FDVA, and we have working with partners like you all and the other representatives. We really appreciate all the support. Again, you know, when I talked about being able to wear my uniform off base when I started in the military, and now to see all the support for veterans from you all and from the general population, it feels very good. So thank you.
Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because my esteemed colleague, Rep. Woodson, said you've been grilled this morning, I'll say this as more of a statement than a question that will let you off the hook to not have to answer. But, you know, I keep hearing about salary compression, salary deficiencies, staffing issues, not having enough beds available, so on and so forth. And I'm just wondering to myself whether or not the FDVA and the population you serve would benefit from Medicaid expansion. Madam Chair, as I said, it's not a question, more or less. I didn't want to put you on, I wasn't tasking you to answer it, if I may. It was just a statement.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you. Are there any further questions or points of discussion? Seeing none, Deputy Executive Director Azulos, thank you again for joining us today and providing this very informative update on issues of continuing concern for all of our members and our constituents. And members, thank you for your work today. This concludes our meeting agenda. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, January 25th. Seeing no further business before the subcommittee, Representative Amnesty moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.